The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The NCAA Women's Championship continues tonight. Two more Elite Eight matchups here on ESPN. In the app, you got the 2-seed UConn taking on the 1-seed NC State in the Bridgeport Regional. And then you got the 3-seed Michigan taking on top-seeded Louisville in Wichita. Spots in the Final Four are on the line. All the action comes your way tonight here on ESPN and the ESPN app. And with that, we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up. I am Greeny. I am back and better than ever. We are live, as always, above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. And we are jam-packed today. I may be sitting by myself, but I am by no means alone. Great football conversation is on the way, and Timmy Legler coming up in the top of this hour as well, talking about the basketball. And that's where it does begin. We are getting up right now with the Lakers, who might need to be giving up on their season. Another devastating loss. And oh, by the way, LeBron is hurt. What a mess. We'll get you there in just a moment. Meanwhile, as they say ta-ta to Tyreek, without their game breaker, are the Chiefs really still contenders in the tightest division ever? Their coach just talked about it, you'll hear it. And with most of free agency finished, which moves made the biggest difference? Did someone win the Super Bowl in March? We'll answer that question as we roll on Get Up here on ESPN. Beginning in Kansas City, you know it by now. They traded away Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins for 5 draft picks. Miami made Hill the highest paid receiver ever. A 4-year extension, $120 million, 72 of that is guaranteed. Just moments ago at the owners' meeting in Florida, Andy Reid had this to say about the trade.
We did try to sign Tyreek at a certain cost. Once it gets past that, now you can see what we're doing here with the players we brought in, and we feel they're very good football players. So we'll see. I mean, the end result is going to be what takes place during the season, but Brett's building this thing back to where we feel comfortable so that we can go win on Sundays.
It's interesting. Brett, it's Brett Veach, who's the general manager there. And as you see, my football squad, awesome today. Orlovsky, Bruschi, Foxworth. Dan, I'll start with you. We talked earlier about how, in the long run, this is a good move for the Chiefs. It's probably something they needed to do for a variety of reasons. But let's deal in the moment. They're playing in the most competitive division quite possibly ever. How do you quantify what the loss of Tyreek Hill will mean for their chances of winning this year's Super Bowl? Dan.
I don't think it impacts it significantly at all, because I think that they have the best offensive line in the conference, might be the best offensive line in football. They have the best head coach and the best quarterback. Anytime you have that combination of three, you are going to be very, very good. And the reality is this organization has 4 picks in the top 62 of the NFL draft, Greeny. If we look at this football team and go, well, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, who was there and now is at Cleveland Brown, or Mecole Hardman, all those guys are second-round draft picks or later. They got 4 picks in the top 62. They added a guy like Marquez Valdez-Scantling that's going to give them speed downfield. Juju Smith-Schuster gives them a physical body at wide receiver that they necessarily haven't had. And I think with those picks, a guy like Jahan Dotson out of Penn State is going to be a very kind of a very good match. He's going to be a guy that reminds a lot of people of Devontae Smith from Alabama, who went to the Eagles, a premier route runner that's going to work in the middle of the field. And I think that they're going to be a team that philosophically goes back to, all right, this offensive line is dominant. We can hand the ball off a little bit. And the reality is this, Greeny. This is a young man from Penn State that is as good as a route runner as you're going to see coming out in this year's draft, him and Chris Olave. He's got great subtlety to his game, strong, sudden speed, phenomenal nuance in his ability to get open. So I think Dotson is a guy that if I told you they added him to this offense, I think this offense can be just as explosive and even more ball control.
Okay, so we just saw there were 6 first-round receivers projected. Oh, Teddy Bruschi. Not buying it. I have to react to that. Go ahead, Teddy, go.
I just disagree. Just as explosive as it was. I mean, this was a gift to every defense that goes up against the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of game planning without Tyreek Hill. I'm telling you, it's just that impactful. I mean, and you want to run the football more? Every handoff by Patrick Mahomes is one less throw by Patrick Mahomes. So defenses will take that all day long. This was the perfect combination of play calling and offensive genius with the skill at quarterback and the explosiveness at the wide receiver position. It's just gone now, and it's different. So Juju, MVS, a rookie receiver, there's going to be transition. It's going to put them behind, especially early in the season. I really think, too, that I mean, once these guys get together, when this is all said and done, and they get together, and it's Kelce, it's Mahomes, it's Hill, they're going to be telling themselves, how do we win only one? They're going to be talking about offsides penalties and the Bengals and how they got lost and all that stuff. Because when you have windows of success and you have AFC championship losses, Super Bowl losses, and you got one, you don't focus on that one. You don't focus on the second or the third. You focus on, you know, losing to Peyton or losing to Eli or Desmond Howard running the kickback in Super Bowl 31. Those type of things you remember. The Chiefs are going to remember how this was a wasted opportunity and they didn't get it done with the cheetah.
That's a really fascinating combination of thoughts there. Nick, let me circle back to you on the first one. Dan doesn't think they lose that much this year without Tyreek Hill, and Teddy disagrees. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I'm on Team Teddy for this one. So I think that it's impossible for us to look at Tyreek Hill and see what he does. He's a special talent and think that it does not impact the team. And I do think that if you want to run the ball, the best way to run the ball is not necessarily to block everybody, is to have fewer people in the box. And you're guaranteed to have fewer people in the box when you have someone who runs a 3.8 40. It changes the math. You don't put safeties in the box because you'd rather tackle a guy for a 5-yard run than be setting up for kickoff return after Tyreek Hill just went to the crib. I think that this team has not gotten better by getting rid of Tyreek Hill this year, but I think they've gotten better over the long term by moving on from Tyreek Hill. But I think we're fooling ourselves if we think any offense gets better by getting rid of one of the best receivers in football.
Go ahead, Danny. Give you the final word. Go.
They, as great as his offense has been, it's equaled one Super Bowl. They lost one because they couldn't, and they lost one because they wouldn't. They wouldn't run the ball last year against the Bengals in the second half, and they couldn't block the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You got to understand, dude. Like,
No. Let's be honest. Hold up. The first one they didn't go to because the guy jumped off sides. Last one they lost because Patrick Mahomes turned into someone we did not recognize in the second
because
half.
Because they would not run the football versus a three-man box.
Mahomes has had success in this league against three-man boxes before. I understand your point that it would have helped them run the ball, but I don't think that was the difference in that game. The one that they lost against the Bucs was because they couldn't protect Patrick Mahomes. So you're arguing
literally
that they're
going to
be—
what I just said.
No, okay, so the point is, if they chose not to run the ball against the Bengals, that is a choice that they made. Getting rid of Tyreek Hill does not change the fact that they made that choice. It does not make them a better running football team.
Yes, it does, because
makes them a better running team.
Because, Dom, they were such an RPO, run-pass option-based offense. Now that Tyreek Hill thrives in that, now that I'm not minimizing his playing ability. Now that he's not there, I think that this team is going to be more committed to actually running the football. And I'm shocked that
They are going to be more committed to it. Getting rid of Tyreek Hill does not change your commitment. That's a commitment that they could have made with Tyreek Hill.
Yes, it does.
That's a commitment you can make with Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill's ability to attack down the field makes it easier for you to run the ball. Stop it.
Hold this thought. I promise I'm going to come back to all of this. I have Tim Legler standing by. The Lakers season probably ended last night. I'm going to get to that here. I promise I'm coming back to all of you on this. But let me show you what happened to LeBron James last night. As he's taken on New Orleans, this is a team very much in this play-in tournament situation. I want you to just watch LeBron here. We'll spot shadow him as he's going in, and that's Jackson Hayes. He steps on the foot and down goes LeBron, and it looks bad. Now, he winds up staying in the game, but take a close look at that if you can. The ankle just turns.
That's one of those that sometimes means you miss a couple of games. He still may, for all we know, but he stayed in this game candidly and played great. This is still in the first quarter here after the injury. And watch LeBron just knocking down threes from all over the place. He made six threes in the first half, which tied his career high for any half. And at halftime, the Lakers had a 20-point lead, and LeBron had scored 25. But wait, there are two halves in these games, and last night that was the problem for L.A. They had led by as many as 23, but now it's a 5-point game, and then Trey Murphy takes it. He would score 21. Now it's a 3-point game. Just over 3 minutes left. The Pelicans are up by two. Brandon Ingram, he has really emerged for this New Orleans team. He would finish with 26. New Orleans up four. And then it's McCollum in the final minute. That's a goaltend on LeBron. He doesn't like the call. There are a lot of things for him not to like. LeBron scores 39, but the Lakers blow the lead. They lose again. LeBron, we have got a problem.
It feels like I mean, excuse my language, but that's what it feels like. You know, I came in with the mindset, understanding it was a playoff type, it was going to be playoff type atmosphere, playoff implications and things of that nature. So, I knew that from the jump. We also got a lot of guys on our ball club that haven't played in playoff games as well. That plays a lot of big minutes for us. You know, it feels like a wasted opportunity, obviously, for myself and for our team, and we weren't able to get it done.
All right, so this is awful. I mean, it goes from bad to worse. They've got only 8 games left this year. They're only favored to win one of them, according to our analytics. They have the hardest remaining schedule of any team in the NBA. And so, Timmy Legler, I can't count the number of times we have asked this year, have they hit rock bottom? Can it possibly get worse for the Lakers? This feels like another one of those mornings. Last night is the kind of night that makes you want to say, they're finished, aren't they?
Yeah, this is the culmination, I believe. And look, I don't know if they're finished necessarily because I know their schedule looks rough, but I also think teams adjust their lineups down the stretch based on their seeding and what they have secured. So you don't know who they're going to get on the floor in these last 8 games as their opponents. But listen, when you blow that kind of lead, there's one reason for it, Greeny. You can't string together stops. When you blow a 20-point lead in a must-have game, it's simply because you cannot string together stops. Because at any point, if you want to stifle a comeback, go get 3 straight stops. Game over. They couldn't do it at any point. And it pretty much summed up their season defensively. They have been so porous. And you are relying on a guy at the tail end of his career to be able to do what LeBron James is doing every night as a scorer. If you'd have told me before the season LeBron James is going to average 30 points a game, I would have said, well, the Lakers are in serious trouble because no player this age should have that kind of burden. And that's really what it's come down to. I think Anthony Davis floating around out there has always been, you know, this mythical Band-Aid that was going to come back and fix everything. But even if you look at last year, he missed 2.5 months, came back, played about 10, 12 games, and broke down immediately in their first round series against Phoenix. So you can't expect Anthony Davis to be the guy that bails you out of this. First of all, we don't even know if he's going to play again this year, and that does not address all of your other issues. The Lakers look cooked. I said they were cooked 2 months ago. Now they might actually finally officially be cooked. That game on Friday against New Orleans could be the be-all to end-all, with San Antonio also now right on their heels.
And so then I guess I would ask you to put into perspective LeBron James' season. He is averaging 30 points a game at the age of 37. It's never been done, and yet his team is where it is. How do we put into perspective the season he's had?
I just think you say this is the one guy physically capable of doing something like this. And once again, he did something that he had to do to get his team at least to stay above water and stay afloat as long as they possibly could. That's the only way to describe it, because Greeny, he is older by a mile than anybody else that's ever put up these kind of scoring numbers in the history of the league. I'm talking 5 years older than anybody who's ever done this. That's remarkable, particularly when you look at the usage and the mileage that this guy has on his legs, all of the long postseason runs that he's had, which equate to about 3 to 4 additional seasons more than most guys play. It's really incredible, and it's an unfair burden to put on him. But I think more than anything else, the fact that they're struggling as badly as they are speaks volumes about roster construction and how bad they have been defensively the entire season.
The last time Michael Jordan averaged 30 points in a season, he was 32 years old. LeBron is 37. Leg, stay close. We'll do more with you as we go. Spirited morning we have working. Coming up, the Bills rode Josh Allen, his arm and his legs, to a deep playoff run. So why is his coach saying we need to pull back on one of those? You'll hear it. Plus, the Nets come up short in Kyrie's first game in Brooklyn. Was a fatal flaw exposed? We'll answer that question as we roll on. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We're back on Get Up. It was one of the great Cinderella runs the tournament has ever seen, but the clock struck midnight on St. Peter's, basically right after tip yesterday against North Carolina. This was the last of the Elite Eight games, and it was really never a contest. That's Caleb Love knocking one down for Carolina. They had a 19-point lead at halftime, and it would just go from there. Armando Bacot was spectacular. He had 15 rebounds in the first half. He would take over this game in every way inside. He finished with 20 points, 22 boards. Carolina wins by 20, and they fill out the Final Four. For St. Peter's, a run to remember. But now the Final Four and the blood couldn't be bluer. Take a look on your screen. It's Duke, Kansas, Nova, and North Carolina who will meet. And here again is my Uncle Seth, Seth Greenberg, no relation. And, you know, I was having this thought. I want to bounce it off you as a longtime coach. I mean, for Mike Krzyzewski to make this run to a Final Four in his final season obviously is spectacular. But how do you think he feels about having to face North Carolina? It's never happened before, about Carolina being the team standing in his way.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Duke Carolina is the biggest game in college basketball each and every year. It gets the highest rating. To me, you think about Duke and Carolina, Coach K, and I talk to Jay Bills, I talk to Jay Will about this all the time. That week is just different, all right? That week is different on campus. That game is different in the locker room. That game is different to Coach K and whoever's coaching at North Carolina. Putting that with a chance to go to the championship game, that's Duke Carolina on steroids. In a lot of ways, it's a burden. You make the Final Four, what do you get? You get a chance to play your rival. Here's the deal, though. Here's what Coach K is going to do, Greeny. No doubt in my mind. What he's going to do is going to – coaching's about creating causes. And what simple is the cause? If these guys took away our senior night. These guys took away my last game in Cameron, all right? And you know what? We have absolutely a cause. Our cause now is to claim it back. I think that could work in reverse, though. And here's why. Then it comes about Coach K again and not about the group. So I think he's got to be very, very careful of the cause he creates off of this Duke Carolina Act 3. The first time in the history of college basketball, Duke Carolina playing in the NCAA tournament, playing in the Final Four, for a chance to play for a national championship.
Super quick, for the fans who will say, well, Carolina beat him at Cameron last time they played. Who's got the better team? Going into it, we have all week to preview it, but which is the better team? Who's playing better?
Duke's playing better and Duke's got the better team. Just count the pros, man. I mean, you kidding me? They got five guys that are going to go in the first round and six guys that's going to go in the second round. Count the pros. Hey, Carolina's playing great, but just go and count the pros. And the guys, how they're playing. Paolo Banchero playing downhill, getting to the rim. 52% of their points are scored in the paint. They're shooting 70% from the field in the paint. You look at Wendell Moore. You look at Jeremy Roach. You look at A.J. Griffin. You look at their team. Five guys in the first round. Count the pros.
We'll see if he's able to do it. Stay close by, Uncle Seth. Thank you. We'll need you all week long as we head to the Final Four. Meanwhile, let me head back to the NFL here because I thought this was interesting. Josh Allen has turned himself into a superstar in Buffalo, but his own coach says he is not yet a finished product. Sean McDermott talking about the ways that he hopes Allen will continue to evolve. And he had some interesting comments that I want to bounce off my crew here. Let's see what he said to the NFL Network's Judy Batista. He said, we want to evolve. We're trying to evolve on the field, off the field, schematically. In this case, with Josh's running, or the amount of times that we run him. We have to continue to evolve that way and making sure we're doing right by him by doing right by our team. What does that mean, Dan Orlovsky?
I think they have to be very smart with the way they're using him. The only challenge is when they use him that way, which in regards to using his legs, he's the most indefensible quarterback in the NFL. And the reality is the Bills have a championship window right now, but you don't want to shrink that window because of the hits that are going to add up for Josh Allen. And we've had this conversation before. There's one guy in the NFL since 2018 who has taken more hits than Josh Allen. Josh Allen's taken 751. The only other guy is Lamar Jackson. That's so much. And the worry is you have a championship window that's a really long period of time because the young man is such a special player. You don't want to shrink it because of all those added hits. And I think it's got to be something that is really smart. And they evolve throughout the season. 10% of the hits in September, 20% of the hits in October, 30% of the hits in November, 40% of the hits in December. So you gradually increase the amount of hits. I don't want him taking in hits in September when those games aren't necessarily going to be in the heat of it near the end of the season.
So, Teddy, I just want to make sure I'm clear. This is not something we usually say in football, but are you have to be willing to lose a few battles in order to win a war with this quarterback?
No, absolutely right. Orlovsky's right here. I mean, when you look back at last season and you have a cut-up reel on any type of hits or anything for Josh Allen and you're looking at him from an offensive staff perspective, you look at week one versus the Steelers, I think it was, he was hit 18 times. That's almost 20 times in week one. So let's lessen that a little bit and take care of this guy because even the biggest, strongest, most physical guys, Josh Allen, I mean, he's not looking for the sideline every time too. He wants to prove a point and prove a point that he's the toughest guy on the field. And he is a lot of the times. But we got to think about November, December, and how he's feeling in terms of his arm, his accuracy. If anything's bothering him, he needs that entire body to throw that football. So let's take it easy on him early in the year.
This is right up my alley. Dominique, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lamar Jackson doesn't really, even though we count those as hits, he doesn't take the type of hits that correct. I think Josh Allen takes. And Josh Allen is delivering those hits, and they take a toll. Cam Newton is the cautionary tale for Josh Allen, and Cam Newton is a better quarterback at his, or excuse me, Josh Allen at his best is a better quarterback than Cam Newton. I think they can survive without him being the centerpiece of their rushing team, which I don't think the Panthers could have in the past. So I'm thinking Josh Allen, we're running end of the year, playoffs, must-win games only. I'm calling design runs with Josh Allen. If you scramble, that's on you. Try to get down. But other than that, we're waiting for December, January time for Josh Allen to run the ball.
I love it. I think that's exactly right. We'll come back to that as we go. Certainly as we work our way through the division, I think factors into it as well. As we continue, however, Kyrie finally plays a home game. It didn't go the way anybody expected. Is there a fatal flaw that was on display last night? We'll talk about it with Timmy Legler. And we'll also see how Legs does against Sneaky Hembo. Here we go. What is the only 8 seed to ever reach the NBA Finals? That's the question. Legs will have the answer next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. All right, so here we go. Timmy Legler, this is from Sneaky Hembo. Well, let me just say the consensus in the room is that this question was too easy. Let's see how you do. Which is the only team seeded number 8 to ever reach the NBA Finals?
Well, it's scary when you think you know it right away, Greeny, because then you start to question yourself. But I think this team eventually would go on to lose in the finals.
Sir Avery Johnson and a big 5-0 David Robinson.
The New York Knicks are the only 8 seed to go to the NBA Finals, eventually losing to Avery Johnson and the San Antonio Spurs.
That's correct. Even Hembo was so enthralled by your Avery Johnson impersonation that even he is not that upset. Yes, that is correct, that it was during the shortened season and it was the Knicks who made it. We bring that up because right now the Brooklyn Nets are the 9th seed in the Eastern Conference, and yet the world seems to want to put them in the finals. This is after Kyrie finally played his first home game last night. There he is. What do you think? Night, so he felt well, but he didn't play particularly well. Actually, the best point guard on the floor last night was LaMelo Ball. What a night he had. Look at LaMelo falling away in the corner. He had 33 points, 7 threes. Let's go to the fourth quarter where this game is decided. Less than 5 minutes remaining. Kyrie showing you the handles. He had a tough shooting night. 6 of 22 from the floor, finishing with just 16, maybe pressing a little bit, Legler said earlier, but here he is showing you the spectacular handles. So we got ourselves a ball game. 3 minutes left. Hornets are up by 1. Shot clock winding down. Cody Martin, the 3 off of 1 foot, knocks it down, and the Hornets take a 4-point lead. Now just over a minute left. Hornets lead is 2. They're going to work it around, and it will be Martin who winds up open in the corner. He drills the 3, and the Hornets make the plays late. They win it, spoiling the party for Kyrie Irving, 119-110. Kyrie?
We know where we are in the standings, and we also know how much talent we have in that locker room, what we're capable of doing. So though this may look like a loss that could have easily been a win column for us, we'll just take our bumps and bruises and move forward.
All right, so this is where things stand. We just brought up only 1 8 seed has ever made it. Now, obviously, we have a play-in now. So, I mean, a 9 seed in the past would never have had a chance to get there. But Las Vegas still considers the Nets to be the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. So, as we go down this stretch now, and the rules have changed in Tim Legler, we will see Kyrie Irving now home and away. The only place he won't be able to play is Toronto, which could be significant in the play-in tournament. Where do you stack up the Nets, despite their being the 9th seed in the Eastern Conference?
I think they have the ultimate puncher's chance because of the talent level of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Listen, on any given night, both of those guys are capable of being the best player on the floor. And some nights they're the best 2 players on the floor. So if that's the case, they're always going to have an opportunity. And the best thing about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, they've shown repeatedly throughout their careers, they don't run from the light, Greeny. They like the biggest stage. So do you really want to bet against them if you get into a one-and-done play-in format? I don't think anybody's going to bet against the Nets in that situation. And now, if you survive that, you get into the postseason. With the exception of Milwaukee, right now, every other one of those top teams has a lot of questions. The Heat couldn't be playing any worse. Philadelphia, I think, right now has some questions about what version of James Harden they ended up getting. So the Boston Celtics are red hot. They're a contender, no question about it. And Milwaukee's pretty complete. They won a championship. But there are questions at the top if Brooklyn can just get in. The problem is their defense is so porous. You wonder if they can win a different way other than Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving being sensational. Because if they're just okay, they can't stop anybody to get those grinded out type of wins. And that's the biggest problem with the Nets. But as long as those two guys run out of the tunnel, the Brooklyn Nets have a chance every single night they play.
Well, a puncher's chance is a far cry from being the favorite, which, again, Vegas thinks that they are. And you just mentioned the Sixers. They lose to Phoenix last night. Now, look, you could look at this a variety of different ways. The Suns won their 8th straight game. They win that game last night. The Sixers had a 15-point lead, but they wind up blowing it. So they've lost a lot of leads. Losing to the Suns is certainly nothing to be ashamed of. Basically, everybody does. The Suns have been by far the best team in the NBA. But you just touched on it briefly. James Harden made 2 shots in 39 minutes last night. When they first made that acquisition, you were very high on it. You were certainly not alone. How worried should you be right now about the 76ers?
I think the level of concern is rising as we speak. I really do, because when I watch James Harden certain nights, and last night was a great example of this, and look, you are playing one of the best defenses in the league, but he has an inability right now to get by the initial defender. And that's something he relies on because it sets up everything. It sets up the step back 3. It allows him to get now clear of the guy guarding him into the paint, which draws people to him to make the passes more impactful to the corner three, the pocket pass, the lob dunk. Well, right now, that initial defender is on his hip as he gets into the lane, which means you don't have to send as much help. He's not getting the calls that he got throughout his entire career when he goes to finish plays. And I saw five or six examples of that last night. So his blow-by rate right now, Greeny and Hembo gave me a great number. Right now it's at 30%. That puts him basically as a mediocre ISO player in this league. You go back to what he was doing in Houston when this guy was in the 90th percentile in the NBA for breaking down and getting by his initial defender. He just can't do that right now. I don't know if it's physically something is going on. It's the mileage on his legs over years of being utilized the way that he has. I don't know what it is, but when I watch him, it's clear he's not the same dominant offensive player that he was. And that should be absolutely concerning to the Philadelphia 76ers because that's the one element from their offense that's missing. And James Harden was supposed to provide it. And some nights it looks pretty good, but usually that's against the mediocre teams in this league. When he plays the elite defensive teams, James Harden is having a hard time right now. And that is what has hit people in Philadelphia very concerned about what they're watching.
All right, so quickly, we've talked about the Nets and the Sixers, and of course, they were the teams involved in this huge trade, and they will be determined by how it goes from here. Which one do you have more faith in going deeper? Right now, who's going deeper in the playoffs this year, the Nets or the Sixers?
I would put more faith in Philadelphia because I do think when you have Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris as your third and fourth best players, you've got a pretty darn good team. And Joel Embiid has been sensational, continues to be driven. I would put more faith in Philly, and particularly because they're going to get at least one series at home. Brooklyn is going to have an incredibly difficult road to get through all of this. So I would say Philly, but I'm not feeling that confident about them. For me right now, Milwaukee and Boston are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. Miami, Philly, and Brooklyn have a lot of things they've got to figure out here over the last couple of weeks heading into the postseason.
We're 2 weeks away from the NBA playoffs, at least with the play-in tournament getting underway. Legs, stay close. Awesome work, as always. Thank you for today. Meanwhile, the NCAA Women's Championship continues. We got the two Elite Eight games coming your way tonight on ESPN and the app. We got the two-seed UConn taking on the one-seed NC State in the Bridgeport Regional, and that's followed by Michigan taking on Louisville, the number one seed in the Wichita Regional. Awesome games tonight. Spots in the Final Four on the line. You'll see it here on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, back to the NFL. Teddy Bruschi with us today, and we've asked him to do the impossible, and that is predict the AFC. So let's go through the divisions. Teddy, right now, who's your money on in the AFC East?
Okay, let's do it, Greeny. I'm going to go with the Buffalo Bills. I mean, not only the AFC East, but shoot, possibly the class of the AFC. Just love the way that they progressed as a football team. The Von Miller signing, I think, is enormous for him to develop a championship mindset with some of those younger players. But take care of Josh Allen early, like we talked about. And then from there, I mean, that's where you can really do some damage. But the AFC East definitely still belongs to the Bills. Going to the North, I'm going with the Bengals. I just see a young nucleus of players, not only on the offensive side of the ball from defense, but all those three levels. Love their linebackers. I mean, great safety and Bates. I mean, these type of players, as long as they take that jump of almost humility that you made to the Super Bowl, but really didn't do anything because you lost it. So keeping them focused, Zach Taylor, you know, playing it one game at a time, I think they still get this division and in the North. All right, let's go to the South. And it's still the Titans in my mind. I mean, this is just... I mean, it's not the strongest of divisions, and this is by far the strongest team, in my opinion, with a quarterback and a head coach coming off a coach of the year in terms of Mike Vrabel. He keeps them focused. Derrick Henry possibly staying healthy this year, but definitely a team that can absolutely dominate the division and possibly in position for the number one seed. So I'll go with the Tennessee Titans in the South. All right, finally, let's go to the West. This one's very tough to predict. I mean, this could be any one of the four, depending on how the last season goes, how the ball bounces. I mean, critical plays in those divisional matchups, the schedule, how it likes to pair those division teams up against each other. I'm going with the Chargers. I like Herbert. I like what they've done on the defensive side of the ball with Mac and J.C. Jackson. They have to progress Staley, learning more as a head coach in critical play calling situations also, but I like the Chargers.
All right, and so you and see the rest of the picks.
And now let's go to these playoff predictions. I mean, I'll throw them out there, Greeny. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you see my division winners? I mean, there's my wild card. I got New England in there. You know I'm going to get my guys in there. I like the Patriots for the wild card. Chiefs will still grind, okay? And, yes, three from the AFC West. I just think that third is going to be the Raiders. I just think that's a team that's tough and gritty. Josh McDaniels find a way to get them in. So, whew, go ahead, fellas.
It is bordering on an impossible task. For the purposes of letting everybody know, Orlovsky refused it. All right? We told these guys we wanted someone to make all these predictions, and Orlovsky just flat out refused to do it. So, Teddy, I give you credit for having the guts to do it.
But
it does leave open. Look, Dominique, no Browns, no Ravens. Yeah. No Broncos.
Broncos, Colts.
What do you think?
Yeah. Nah, I mean, it's again, credit to Teddy for not being scared. I don't know what Dan was scared of. Like, you can get it wrong, man. You can change your mind after the draft, but it's fine. I do think that I got the Colts coming out of the South. That's one of the big ones for me is I think that the difference that the quarterback change or with adding Matt Ryan and moving on from Carson Wentz, I think matters. That defense is really good. We can't guarantee that they'll get as many turnovers as they did last year, but one thing you can rely on is a steady offensive line and protection. And every quarterback is much better when they are not under pressure and when they feel comfortable and when they feel safe. Every quarterback is really a lot more impressive out of play action, with exception of Patrick Mahomes, which doesn't make sense. But I do think that we'll see Matt Ryan's resurgence and this team will win the division.
Go ahead, Danny.
Hey, Dom, keep my name out of your mouth.
No, we've seen that went badly last night. Let's not do that here.
We can't put the Browns in there because we don't know if there is a suspension with Deshaun Watson and how many games he might potentially miss. I don't know if this is Teddy's list or Ninko's list because both of you guys left the Ravens out. And I have no idea how. Like, how are we not putting the Ravens in? The Ravens are going to get back two of the best corners in football from injury. Lamar Jackson hopefully stays healthy this year. They signed Marcus Williams, one of the best safeties in football. Morgan Moses at tackle is a huge deal for them. And if this team just stays healthy, they have as good a shot to win their division as Cincinnati does. And I love Cincinnati, certainly, to get in the playoffs. And I would say, and I know you mentioned it, your guys, got to get your guys in there. I would say New England's kind of gone backwards this offseason, right? Like the loss of JC, no addition at wide receiver yet, Van Noy not being there, Marcus Cannon gone. I would say that Baltimore has gotten better. New England's gotten worse up until this point.
Go ahead, Teddy.
So if there's one to bump, Danny, if there's one to bump, who you bumping? Is it New England?
I think I bumped New England right now, for sure. Yeah, and I have Baltimore in there. I also think Denver in there. I would probably bump, oh, my gosh, dude.
Everything.
See, this is why I don't want to do the rest.
The Raiders. They got you.
Look, we live in a world now, Dominique, where four teams can get in from one division, right. But it's going to be very hard to do based upon just playing each other so much. So the team he left out, the team Teddy left out from that AFC right. West is Denver. Who's the team you're leaving out?
Yeah, I'm leaving the Raiders out. I think they got better, but as John Mara taught us earlier in the show, is that the quarterback position, I think people are realizing that it's important. So I'm going to go with what I think to be the best three quarterbacks in that division, which is Russell Wilson over Derek Carr. Thanks, John.
We will see. All right. Let me take a quick break. We had this heated debate on here at the beginning of the hour, and I promised these guys I would come back to it. I'm going to do that next. Without their game breaker, are the Chiefs still the best team in the best division we've ever seen? That answer is on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow. I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It is that time once again where I will pose a series of hard-hitting questions to Dominique Foxworth, and whether he is ready or not, he will have to answer them. Here comes the first. Dominique, will Baker Mayfield be a starting quarterback in the NFL this season?
I absolutely think he will. Like, I think that he's a first-round, number one overall pick talent-wise, and then you can explain away the bad seasons that he's had. I'm not saying that it's right, but I think it's easy for a team to talk about the injuries last year, talk about the coaching situations in the past, and talk about and point to the successes that he's had. And you look around this league, there aren't 32 quarterbacks better than Baker Mayfield. And I think teams are going to want him. I think Seattle looks like a place that might end up getting him. And I think the Browns want to get rid of him. So he'll be cheap to acquire and an upgrade over the quarterback situation in a lot of places in the NFL. So I'd be shocked if he's not a starter at week one.
Okay, that is one of the shoes we are still waiting to see drop. Next question. Will Mike McCarthy be the Cowboys coach through the entirety of next season?
I think so. As much as we enjoy Jerry Jones's persona as a wheeling, dealing oil man, he really isn't that like outrageous when it comes to hiring and firing coaches. Like, we all have talked about how he may have kept coaches around for a little too long. This is like going to be Mike McCarthy's like second real year. The first year, Dak got hurt, so it's hard to count that against him. Last year, they struggled in the playoffs with some bad decision-making by him. And frankly, they struggled with clock management all year. So there's reason to be upset with him. But I think he gets the full season. And if they don't go deep into the playoffs this year, and if Mike McCarthy makes a bunch of mistakes, I think Jerry Jones is going to be throwing money at Sean Payton, which we all already kind of expect.
Okay, and then I have one more for you. We've talked all morning long about how the AFC is now just loaded beyond belief. The NFC is kind of the JV right now. Who's your favorite in the NFC?
I'm going to go with the Bucs. I've doubted Tom Brady in the past, but the roster, as it does have some holes now, but they have two good tackles, multiple great weapons, a quarterback that is the greatest of all time and still playing at that level, could have reasonably won the MVP last year. They brought Carlton Davis back on defense. They still have Vita Vea in the middle, even though we have question marks about Sue. They still have Antoine Winfield Jr. at safety, Levante David at linebacker. Like, this team may not be all that deep and still could use some improvements at like interior line play on both sides of the ball. But you put that aside, and we're still pre-draft and free agency isn't over yet. I think with Tom Brady there, they're going to be able to attract some talent and frankly develop the guys that they get in pretty quickly. So I'm going to go with Tom Brady. I think it's a safe bet at this point in the preseason.
All right, Tampa Tom in the NFC. I like it. Meanwhile, let me go back. I like to keep my promises when I can. Earlier in this hour, we got into just a free-for-all about the impact of Tyreek Hill being traded to the Dolphins, where he got this huge contract extension and everything else. And we, at a different time, can talk about what this means for the Dolphins. But the debate that we had here was what it means for the Kansas City Chiefs. And so let me try and distill this as best I can to its point. Teddy Bruschi. The departure of Tyreek Hill, while in the long run may be the best thing for Kansas City for salary cap reasons, in your opinion, what does it do to them this year as far as being a Super Bowl favorite?
Well, I mean, I'll even pick the Chargers to win the division. I think that's just how impactful it is. Tyreek Hill was a problem that as soon as defensive coordinators went into the meeting room, that's who they talked about. Defenders, they like played basketball defense on the guy, just waiting and hoping he would run out of bounds. That type of threat, that type of talent paired with the play calling and the quarterback that not only had the arm, but had the mentality of saying, I don't even care that there's two guys on him. I'm just going to throw it in a place where he can only get, and I'm going to do that. That's something that I think was rare, and that's something that they'll miss, and recapturing and reinventing themselves is definitely something they have to do now.
And so, Dan, I don't want to go ahead. Take your position on this. What do you think of the Chiefs this year without Tyreek?
I still think that they're going to have one of the best offenses in football. I just think their offense is going to go about it differently. Tyreek Hill in two games against the Chiefs last or the Chargers last year had 16 catches and one touchdown. Good, but not, oh my gosh, we have no chance of stopping this guy. I think the Chiefs looked at their offense, and I had talked about this a lot last year. I believe that they had become too foundationally built upon the RPO, the run-pass option, and it won them a Super Bowl 3 years ago, no doubt about it. But it became a crutch for them in many ways. And I think they looked at their offense and said, we have one of the, if not the best offensive lines in football, and we got one of the best coaches and one of the best quarterbacks. This player wants this much money. Do we believe that he is irreplaceable in our offense when we have all these other pieces? And I am somebody in football who says, if you've got a dominant offensive line, all the other pieces become better because of that offensive line. And I just think the Chiefs sat back and said, we'd rather have five or six really good weapons than one just Tyreek Hill, given what the cost was going to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they made this decision.
To be clear, the cost we get, that part of it we get. But Dominique, right now, this minute, we understand what it'll be 3 years from now. Right this minute, are the Chiefs less of a contender than they otherwise were?
Absolutely. It's impossible not to be not to get worse when you get rid of a top five receiver in the game. I think Dan's point I don't disagree with because he's making two of them and they're both right, but they're contradictory. Like the point is they tried to re-sign him. You're making it seem like
Correct.
They decided to move away from Tyreek Hill because they want to play this more physical run focused game. No, they tried to re-sign him, but they wouldn't re-sign him at the price. And if you think they need to be more dependent on the run game or less dependent on the RPO, that's something you can do with Tyreek Hill. Like getting rid of Tyreek Hill doesn't make them better. I agree with you. Becoming less dependent on the RPO and also being a more aggressive physical team is smart. You can do that with a guy who stretches the field and forces you to never face any more than seven men in a box because they're scared of him.
I have one very disappointing thing to say, and that is that our time is up. There's no option here. First Take is going to start whether we're ready for it or not. Top of the hour, they will debate who has more at stake come playoff time, Brooklyn or Philly, plus are the Lakers done? Stephen A., Molly, Kendrick Perkins, Tim Legler coming up top of the hour here on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
After North Macedonia's massive upset of Italy on Thursday, they will square off against the great Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal tomorrow afternoon, with the winner going to this year's World Cup. You will see all the action with our coverage beginning 2:30 Eastern. That's tomorrow on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. It has been a spirited day, and I will say again, as I've said many times, it is a delight and a privilege to have a job you're excited to come back from vacation to do. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.